The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back inside the Sportsnet 960 downtown studio. My name is Will Nault alongside Logan Gordon. Hour number two is underway. Don't forget you can find The Big Show wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Subscribe now. Never miss a moment or a guest. And we'll exercise the guest hotline right now as the 2022 Hockey Hall of Fame class was announced today. Henrik and Daniel Sedin, Daniel Alfredsson, Roberto Luongo, Enrica Salinen, all in the player category, and Herb Carnegie in the builder category. Also, what a run for Calgary and Cale Makar and the Avalanche as they have won the Stanley Cup. For more on all of that, welcome in a former member of the selection committee for the Hockey Hall of Fame, a Hall of Famer himself, the one and only Eric DeHatcher joins us right now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm good. This is always one of the more interesting days of the year for me, although the longer I get removed from the selection committee, the more remote it seems. And yet I thought this year was a pretty easy one to handicap. I don't know, did you guys pretty much nail this one, especially in the male player category, or what was the direction you were taking?
Yeah, I certainly thought that we would see the Sedin twins. I didn't think there was any question about that. And then when you think about the fact that he was the second goalie ever to play 1,000 games, I thought for sure, no question, Roberto Luongo would be there. Daniel Alfredsson, it kind of felt like it was his time, so not surprised there. Caroline Ouellette, I think, is the one omission that many are wondering whether or not and why she wasn't in. And then, of course, another time passed where we didn't see Alexander McGillney get in. So those would be the only ones for me that I wasn't sure. Logan, what about you? Is there a name or two missing on this list that you thought maybe should have been there?
Well, that's the big one for me. That was the one that I was expecting, especially that there was another spot when it comes to, you know, the women being inducted this year, that there was only one. So that was the one that immediately, yeah, and I think a lot of people were wondering about Alexander McGillney, and I thought it was fitting to see Luongo with the Sedins, a group that defined that era of Canucks hockey. But yeah, I think McGillney and Ouellette were the ones that came to mind for me.
Yeah, well, so I think you guys have nailed it. So to me, I thought, someone asked me, last week, who are the locks? And I said, well, I think Luongo was, even more so than the Sedins, a lock, because first of all, goalies are notoriously underrepresented in the Hall of Fame. If you go back to, I think, 1993, I think there's only been seven elected. And I think there's good cases to be made for example, Mike Vernon, for Tom Barrasso, for a number of goalies that, year after year haven't been able to get the necessary votes. But in Luongo's case, I just think that the sheer volume of his numbers made him like about a 95% sure thing. My question with the Sedins was simply this. Again, they were going to go into the Hall of Fame, but it was trickier this year because it was effectively a double cohort, right? So the committee didn't meet last June. So effectively, there were two groups of players, the ones that retired in 2018 and the ones that retired in 2019 that were eligible for the first time. So it was a bit more crowded than it usually is in terms of first-year eligibles. And in the Sedins' case, I couldn't imagine one going in without the other. So if you concede one spot to Luongo, and then if there had been any support, say, for Alfredsson and McGillney ahead of the Sedins, that's three. And then, can you put Henrik in without Daniel or Daniel in without Henrik? It would really look awkward, right? So that was the thing. I rated it at 60-40 that they would get in this year only because of the complication of right, this election year compared to other years. And that to me was the one thing, because I'm kind of sitting here pre-writing a column and whatnot, but that was the question that was darting around in the back of my mind. And then when it comes to the fourth male player, I think Daniel Alfredsson's credentials are as good as McGillney's, but I also think there's a case to be made for a lot of other players that have been overlooked for a long period of time. If you crunch the numbers, there's four players with more than 1,200 career points that aren't in the Hall of Fame. One over 1,300, Pierre Turgeon, and then Rod Brind'Amour is just under 1,200, and won some trophies and you know, when you think about a guy like Guy Carboneau getting in a couple of years ago, that was after I'd left the selection committee, didn't, you know, Rod Brind'Amour check a lot of those same boxes. So it's always interesting. And then, again, I wish I was still kind of a, you know, in that room to hear the back and forth, because that's always, you know, it was always one of the most fascinating days of the year for me to, you know, to have that discussion. And I always say this, you know, you really try to go in with an open mind. You have to, you know, you're leaning this way, you're leaning that way, but people put a lot of time and effort into their presentations. And so you want to be able to go in there and listen, like actually hear what people have to say. And I do believe that, you know, sometimes a compelling argument can be made in the room that sways you if you have one of those on the fence kind of a candidate. So, but overall, I think that the male player category is really good. And, you know, if McGinley had been there instead of Alfredson, I don't think there would be the kind of the backlash you're seeing on social media right now, because I do think if there's one player that, you know, that public perception is of being, quote, snubbed, I think it's Alex McGinley.
I know that you just certainly talked a lot about it there, and that's kind of where I was going to go next. So that would be for you, Eric, the one thing you missed the most about not being on the selection committee anymore is that that debate?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, I think I can say this without breaching confidentiality. You have 18 very strong-willed, opinionated people in that room. And so it's fascinating, you know, that, you know, just about everybody that's in there has had, you know, some success at some level in the industry. And, you know, it's a pretty confident group, right? So there's not a lot of shrinking violence. I think I'm okay saying all of these things. And, it is a fascinating exercise. The whole process is, you know, you get together the night before, you have a dinner in the Great Hall. It drives the point home that, you know, the Hall of Fame is a special place. It's physically, it's a special place. And then, you know, to have all of the plaques that are there. I mean, I have to, you know, full disclosure, you know, whenever I went to those dinners, I'd sort of sidle up to the writer's side there and, you know, look at my plaque to make sure they hadn't removed it yet, that it's still sitting there. So it is a really interesting exercise. And I wasn't sure, you know, when I got to the 15 years, the term limit, I thought, you know, I've done my time and it's time to let someone else, you know, have their turn. And in fact, it was Cassie Campbell Pascal that replaced me on the committee. But then, you know, when it came around the next year, I was like, oh, I still wish I was there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We can get more on the players in a second. I'll let Logan certainly fire a couple of questions your way. But I did want to ask you, because, of course, for longtime listeners of this station, they would have heard, speaking of debates, you and him going at it a lot over the years. I just wanted to give you some time if you had some thoughts on Elmer Gantt getting in this year, too, with the Elmer Ferguson.
Yeah, well, I was really happy about that. I mean, you know, I have chaired for 20 years the Elmer Ferguson Committee, which is the, you know, the writers' wing of the hall. So it's an honored position rather than, you know, full honored membership. And you know, basically, I don't vote, but I run the election. And this year, you know, we had a number of very, very good candidates. But Al and I go back to 1980-81. He's actually been at this longer than I have, because, you know, prior to the Flames coming to Calgary, Al covered them for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution in 79-80. And when they moved from Atlanta to Calgary, that's when he accepted the job in Philadelphia. So my first year of covering the NHL, he was one of the main hockey writers in Philadelphia. He worked at the Inquirer. Jay Greenberg worked at the Daily News. Ned Colletti, who went on to have a successful career as a baseball executive and was GM of the Dodgers for a number of years, he covered for the Journal, and a man named Harry Brennan covered for the Bulletin. So it was an unbelievable newspaper town back when newspapers were still very, very influential. And both myself and Steve Simmons were just really starting out in the business. And there was no doubt in my mind that if you could ever check all the boxes of what makes somebody good in the industry, it was Al. He had a morning deadline to write to. He had a wit about him. Like, if you write for a living, one of the hardest things to do is to write, you know, humor or funny, it's just to amuse people, to entertain. I mean, we try to entertain in our business, and we try to inform. And Al did that better than practically anyone for 10 or 12 years. And the best example, that the one that I always cited, was in 1992, before The Athletic, where I work now, came along, there was a short-lived all sports publication in the United States. It lasted 18 months. It was called The National. And Frank DeFord from Sports Illustrated, formerly from Sports Illustrated, ran it. And he basically had his choice of anyone that he could hire in North America to fill those jobs. And they were paying big money because there's no money in the printed word. And so he got everybody that he wanted. And his choice as the main national writer for the National was Al Morganti. And that indicated to me what his stature was in the industry. And then the National didn't last, I think it was only about 18 months. And then after that, you know, Al switched to radio and television. And you know, if you look at the NHL package, you know, you still see him on Flyers broadcast. He's on the morning show in Philadelphia. He's just really good. And, you know, like, we had so much fun. You know, we started out doing that East-West hot stove on Bob McCallum's show in Toronto. And then we ended up doing it with Rob Kerr here for years. And I heard from people all the time that was their favorite segment of the week on your station, the two of us going back and forth. Just a smart guy with a good sense of humor and just a old school in the best way, right? And so I was very pleased that Al was selected and spoke to him the day afterwards, congratulated him. And he's humble, appreciative, you know, just responded to it the way you hope somebody does. And I was real happy for him.
He is Eric DeHatchick joining us here on the big show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Eric, it's interesting. I saw on Twitter over the last couple of weeks that, you know, there's been a big social media push from people in Ottawa to you know, continue to make a case and maybe make note that Daniel Alfredson should have been in the Hall. And I'm curious how that's evolved over the last couple of years when it comes to selection process in the Hockey Hall of Fame, where not necessarily social media, but, you know, maybe someone on the selection committee making an impassioned plea for somebody, or someone taking up the cause of a certain player that plays into the selection role when it comes to whoever it is, that, you know, whether it's a first-time guy or a long-time player.
Yeah, well, what I would tell you is there's an awful lot of very experienced people that sit on that selection committee. And as with a lot of us experienced people, you know, we try not to be as influenced by social media. So, you know, I'm sort of running through my head the various people that are there and how much social media might influence them. I would say, you know, that there isn't like a one-size-all-fits answer for 18 people. But I think most of those people would be, what's the word I'm looking for? Not oblivious to social media, but simply not swayed by the accounts on social media. But now, the one thing I will say this is the Hall of Fame has a provision for public submissions. And normally the people that go through that mechanism do a really good job of building a case for a candidate. And so the way the Hall of Fame works is that, you know, there can be a lot of names out there, but to be actually considered for Hall of Fame consideration in a given year, you have to be nominated by a member of the selection committee. So, you know, I don't know, for example, if Alex McGillney was nominated this year, because they don't publish a list of candidates. They only publish a list of successful, Hall of Famers. So we don't even know if McGillney was nominated. We don't know if Jeremy Roenick was nominated. You know, those are all things that they keep private. But I do think when there is a strong case made for a particular candidate, that's when selection committee members do take notice. So, you know, for example, if somebody was pitching Mike Vernon, and if there was a good campaign made on his behalf, you know, it might influence someone on the selection committee to actually nominate him, carry the nomination forward, bring it up for discussion, and then at that point, you know, 14 people have to vote in favor to get into the Hall of Fame, 14 out of 18. That's the other thing I've said to you in the past, Will, that it's always worth repeating. You know, I would say that if it was a political campaign and a candidate won 67% of the vote, that would be considered a landslide victory. But in the Hall of Fame, if you get 67% of the votes, that's 12 out of 18. That doesn't get you in. You have to get 75%. It's hard. Like, it's really, really hard. You don't realize how hard it is until you're actually part of it. In fact, that's why I invented this thing at The Athletic, which we call the Shadow Committee, because, you know, even internally where I was working, a lot of people were saying, well, this player is snubbed, that player is snubbed. And I said, snubbed is not the right word. I said, it's hard to elect somebody. It's hard to get that kind of a consensus. So we started doing it. We got some very experienced hockey writers together. And I said, okay, you know, you make the case for your candidate, but you need to convince 13 other people. And remember, there's only so many places. So, you know, it's not like we can put 7 in or 9 or something like that. And whoever has participated in the exercise has come away with a better understanding of how complicated and difficult the process is. So I don't like actually using the term snub, because I don't feel that you can even say that. I mean, we don't know. Again, you know, someone might have got 13 votes. Someone might have got 12. Someone might have had the majority of people on the committee supporting their Hall of Fame candidacies, and still that candidate wasn't elected today.
Where do you, and now that you're off of the committee, and maybe it's changed your view, maybe it hasn't, but where do you come down on the privacy that is around the process of these selections?
Yeah, you know what, and I know I'll be in the minority here, and a lot of people won't like to hear this, but I support it only because, like, the whole intention of it is, there's two. One is so that you can speak freely about not just the candidate's pros, but also the cons of a candidacy. And the feeling is that if you weren't bound by this confidentiality agreement and people were to speak negatively about someone's candidacy, that information would leak out, and then the committee member the next time around wouldn't be as frank and honest and open about you know, making the case for and against a candidate. So I don't really have a problem with it. I mean, I think the system works, you know, pretty well. You know, I can understand, you know, we're in an era where people are always looking for transparency. You know, for example, in our association, Professional Hockey Writers Association, everyone's awards ballot are now published. So you know, you can look it up and see, oh yeah, Juhacek, he voted McDavid first and Matthews second, and he went Makar first and Yossi second, and so on and so forth. It's available on the public record. You just have to go on the PHWA website. And, you know, a lot of people think that's a good thing. I know some members of our group are unhappy about that. So I'm okay with it. I sort of lived with that mechanism for 15 years. And even though I'm as curious as you are to see who's nominated, I can live with the fact that this process seems to work pretty well.
Do you have a lasting memory or one that sticks out when you think of this class? Now that we've had a couple of hours to process it, is it a Luongo one? Is it something from the Sedins? Is there one that sticks out in your mind, Eric?
Yeah, well, those three. I didn't really know Daniel Alfredson that well because he played most of his career in the East. I found Roberto Luongo an unbelievably charming person to deal with. Just open and funny. And you look at his Twitter account, that's Strombone1. It hasn't been as active lately because it's kind of getting into management and, you know, management, you know, in the NHL tends to be kind of humorless, but he's just a genuinely, you know, enjoyable person to deal with. Over the arc of my writing career, you know, I've enjoyed interactions with him as much as anyone else. And I will say the same for the Sedins, you know, respectful, you know, really wonderful people, you know, just stand up guys in that 2011 series against Boston that ended so, you know, challengingly for Vancouver. I always say, you know, you would want your children to be like the Sedins. They're just, you know, good people and good to deal with. They represent a lot of the qualities that make hockey good at a time when a lot of people, you know, aren't loving, you know, the sport and the culture of the sport. You know, the Sedins, I think, are shining examples of people who have done it right for a long time, that are right as players, are doing it right as managers. I think are legitimate role models for a game that needs that. And so I'm happy for all three of them. I'm happy for everyone that gets inducted in the Hall of Fame, because it's an unbelievable experience. You know, I think even preparing for it and knowing what it is involved to actually go through the inductions, to be at the hall for, you know, really, I think it's 96 hours, the various things that they participate in terms of Hall of Fame game, ring ceremony, blazer ceremony, and then speeches at night. It's overwhelming. And most come away from it deeply touched by the honor. And, you know, I used to go there and sit in the crowd in the 10th or 12th row, and it moved me every year. It moved me every year.
He is Eric Dehatchik of The Athletic, joining us here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan, the Hall of Fame class in 2022 was announced today. Eric spent 15 years on the Hockey Hall of Fame selection committee. Moving away from that, just quickly, just your thoughts on what we just saw. Obviously, a tremendous run from Tampa, even to stay that hungry and being a third straight Stanley Cup final, something we haven't seen in over 40 years. Your thoughts on the Avalanche being crowned champions? Hard to believe, Eric. 5 years ago, one of the worst teams in league history.
Yeah. Well, but don't you agree, Will, that we were there for the start of the turnaround?
Yep.
Because to me, if you think about, you know, when it all started to go right for Colorado, they had really good pieces. But what galvanized them? Cale Makar steps into the lineup in, what was it, 2019, the first yep. place Calgary Flames against the eighth place Colorado Avalanche. Flames heavy favorites, and Makar is, you know, just starting his professional career. And then he looked to you like, from the moment he stepped in the lineup that first game, like this kid is special. You know, I think a lot of people in Calgary knew his backstory, because of course he played in the AJHL in Brooks, and he was well known in the community. But to see him take, you know, to go from that college level to the NHL level and not miss a beat. He was so good in that series against Calgary. And really, it's been onward and upwards for him since then, and it's been onwards and upwards for the Avalanche. So, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think this year's Stanley Cup final, I mean, the only thing wrong with it was that it was played in the final 2 weeks of June. And I do think that there are a percentage of hockey fans that simply do not want to watch a winter sport at, you know, in effectively the summer. And so I think that might have taken away from it. I haven't seen what the television ratings are. I'm going to guess that they're not spectacular. They're probably solid, because hockey was excellent. It was, if you took the time to watch and you cared about the sport of hockey, you saw a lot of great hockey being played. So, but yeah, you know, you're right. The journey from bottom to top in a very short period of time was remarkable. I do think Jared Bednar made a great point, which was that even as bad as they were that year, they had some really good young pieces that were coming and were ready to take that step. And they collectively took that step together. And they've been one of the more fun teams to watch for the last few years. And then this year, you know, in addition to being a fun team to watch, I think they learned how to play playoff-style hockey, which requires a little bit more intensity and a little bit more gumption, I guess, for lack of a better word. Something that Tampa had to learn after they lost to Columbus, that, you know, you can freewheel all you want, but when push comes to shove in the playoffs and you're playing a series of best of seven, you better have somebody in there that's prepared to push back. And so it was a really great final. And I think that, you know, as disappointing as it probably was for fans in Calgary that they exited when they did, you know, to see a local product like Cale Makar star on that stage, you know, that counts for something.
No doubt. And it's funny, we talked about Hall of Fame. I mean, he's only 23, but a Hobie Baker, a Calder, a Norris, a Conn Smythe, the Stanley Cup, and he's only 23. I think he might be on his way, too, if all things go well for him.
A little, yeah. You just have to add the longevity part of the resume,
yes,
and the rest of it clicks into place for sure.
What do you, you mentioned you're working on an article right now. Obviously, everyone here, what's your gut tell you about Johnny Gaudreau, Eric?
Yeah, that's a really tough one. You know, I just think and I don't know, you know, what he is thinking right now, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was genuinely unsure, because I think you can take it at face value that he loves the experience of playing here. So professionally, this has been a good experience for him. There's been some ups and downs, but for the most part, I think he likes playing in this market, in front of these fans for this team at this time. But I also think that there probably are some personal tugs. I mean, he talks about his family and you know, this is a crossroads in his life, right? And he's married now. You know, they're going to have a baby. The grandparents are all in the East. You know, I know what, you know, grandparents are like. You know, they want grandchildren in the area if at all possible. So honestly, my interpretation of it is he's there and he can see merit in both sides, testing free agency and possibly signing with a team on the East Coast, which brings them closer to home. Money is going to be there. But then the money to me is not an issue. I mean, you know, he'll get from Calgary what he can get elsewhere on the market, I think, or it'll be so close that it won't make a tangible difference in terms of his lifestyle and that of, you know, every generation to come there. He just needs to, you know, figure out what he wants to do next. And if I were giving him advice, it would simply be that there is value sometimes to separating personal from the professional. I mean, I grew up in Toronto. I spend my summers at our family place. But, you know, when I come back here for the start of a hockey season, you know, I don that professional skin. And, you know, sometimes my kids don't recognize that person because, you know, friendly old dad can sometimes have a little bit more backbone when he's doing his job, which you have to have in our industry to succeed for any length of time. And I think there's value to that. And I hope he's considering that, you know, and I'll give you another good example of this. You know, when at the start of the season, Gaudreau and the general manager, Brad Treliving, said, you know, we couldn't agree on a contract, but now we don't want to talk about it. I think for the most part, you know, like people at your station, the newspapers here, they respected that. You know, this is that wouldn't happen in very many other markets. And it was only when, you know, the national guys started coming in for the playoffs that those questions came up again. And, you know, in a similar situation in a different market, I don't think he would have had that kind of privacy and not had that point driven home time after time after time after time the way it would in other markets. He has to value that. He has to think about that you know, he can have a measure of privacy even as a public figure in this market. That people here are respectful of his wish for privacy there, and not every, he wouldn't get that anywhere else. So I hope he is thinking along those lines when he's making the decision, because the grass isn't always greener in the next place. And, you know, as someone who came out here in 1978 thinking I might stay for a short time, I can tell him, or I can tell anyone, that this is a pretty great place to be. And it's a pretty great place to work the full arc of your professional life. And, I hope that's something that, you know, that he's considering now as he's weighing all his options.
Well, I'm sure many fans that are listening now are saying, let's make sure that Eric has Johnny's number and then he can call him and give him that exact same plea. Because, many waiting with bated breath and hoping that he decides to stay in Calgary. We'll wait and see what happens. We're getting closer and closer to decision time for him. You mentioned you're working on something. What are you working on? Can you share with us?
Today, Hall of Fame, the weekly notes columns. I'm going to the draft.
Oh, nice.
Is it a week today? I think it's a week today.
Get some smoked meat sandwiches?
I don't know how it's been for you guys, but this has been a blur.
Yes.
The playoffs have been a blur. The season's been a blur. It's almost felt like three nonstop seasons that have bled into one another. So what I'm looking forward to is you know, finishing the year off on a high writing note, and hopefully after about the 15th, 16th, 17th of July, turning off my laptop, turning off my phone, and singing a song that old timers will hear called "See You in September," which used to be how we did things, and that's kind of what I'm looking for again, a chance for a good long break from the work that. Yeah. Just doesn't seem to ever end.
It's kind of crazy listening to Ron McLean. You mentioned of it, the Tampa run. I think it was the third Stanley Cup in and around 700 days. So, like, we're talking, bang, bang, bang for Tampa. And ultimately, they could not get the three-peat, but you're right. I think a lot of people agree with you that it has all bled together, and we are looking forward to getting back on the normal calendar and having some sort of break here in about 3 weeks' time. Eric, great stuff as always. Really enjoyed talking with you, and we'll catch up soon. Thank you, man.
Okay, thank you.
There he is, Eric DeHatchick from The Athletic, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. For every dollar you spend, earn points towards free pizza with their rewards program. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Were you working here when he and Al Morganti used to go head to head on the hot stove?
Yes, I think for about a year or so.
It was awesome, man. It was fantastic.
East West, Rob Kerr, you know, just kind of throw some gas every now and then.
Literally,
and then
literally, Rob would say about five words, and then they would go back and forth for 7 minutes. It was.
I do remember the old East West hot stove. Yeah.
Fantastic. And as we were kind of going through the interview, I was like, man, I should have called Al while we were at it. We could have had a flashback. Maybe we'll do that at some point in the summer. But congratulations to the Hockey Hall of Fame class of 2022. We'll have more on that coming up in headlines, kicking off hour number three. We are live on your Monday afternoon, leading you into first pitch. Blue Jays and Red Sox tonight from the Rogers Centre. Game one of this three-game set. Kevin Gausman and Connor Siebold is your pitching matchup. 5:07 first pitch right here on Sportsnet 960. And, of course, you can watch it as well on Sportsnet. Take a break. Come back with more. Hour two rolls on. Big Show is live. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. On a Monday afternoon in the city of Calgary, it is The Big Show. Logan Gordon and Will Nault along with you. Our producer today is Aaron Howell. You can get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Apple, Google, Amazon, Spotify. They are posted moments after the hour finishes. Hour one today, Peter Labardius. Some thoughts on the NFL offseason quarterback carousel and what's remaining. Hour two, we just kicked it off with a longtime friend of the station, Eric DeHatchick, on his thoughts on the 2022 class. Will the Hockey Hall of Fame, headlined by the Sedins, Roberto Luongo, Daniel Alfredsson, good class of Swedes there too. Canucks and Swedes, what going hand in hand there?
Forget the. In Vancouver, there was those years where there was a lot of Swedes on their team. And, of course, now it's in Calgary with a lot of Swedes. But Swedes do love Vancouver. No question. They still have a handful, obviously, on their team now. But, yeah, I love the way you put it with DeHatchick. It's completely 100% bang on. You know, when you think about that era of Canucks hockey, probably the first three names that come to mind are Daniel and Henrik Sedin and Roberto Luongo. I don't think there's any question. Obviously, you'd probably throw in a couple of other names like Ryan Kesler, Matthias Olund. There's obviously a handful of guys that are in that same kind of era, Alex Burrows.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for a lot of hockey fans and certainly maybe just even observers, those would be the first three that come to mind. And I love the way you put it. It's definitely very fitting for those three to go in. And also, to Eric's point, you probably couldn't, especially when you're talking about the first ballot part of it. You couldn't have one of the Sedins and not the other. You kind of had to have both. And it does feel right to see them go in there together.
It would just feel wrong. They were so tied at the hip from, you know, probably day one of their lives, but even in their hockey career, from Brian Burke doing all that incredible work to get them drafted together. The success they had was almost always hand in hand. And you know, they dealt with injuries here or there where they played a long stretch without the other, but they were always the most successful with one another. And yeah, it's probably, even if you don't feel like one of them was Hall of Fame worthy or first ballot worthy, I should say, the conversation probably shifts too much away from the accomplishment. If you were to split them up, Alfredsson was an interesting one for me. I didn't necessarily have Alfredsson pegged as a first ballot Hall of Famer. Did you?
Who's that?
Daniel Alfredsson.
No, this isn't his first ballot, but I.
That's right. Correction. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. He's not first timer.
So I definitely wouldn't have guessed that. But I mean, when you talk about his career numbers, absolutely, I think, deserving to be in. I think the one milestone that still maybe probably should be met. Of course, Alfredsson didn't have 500 goals. But if we're going to sit here and talk about the Sedins and talk about them as slam dunk Hall of Famers, then you've got to talk about Alfredsson in the same way. And, you know, in a lot of the same ways we just talked about the Sedins and Luongo when you talk about Canucks hockey. I mean, he was and is the face of the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, he still is.
Still, when you think about them, that's the first name that comes to mind.
Yeah. I think that plays into it a lot, too. I don't necessarily think that that's on anybody's must, but I think being the guy for a franchise for a period of time or maybe their entire period of time, even now, I still think that plays into it.
And it's interesting, too, in this class, and I don't know where you stand on this. We've never really necessarily gotten into it on this program about it, but zero Stanley Cups among those four on the male side. Now, I do understand this is the Hockey Hall of Fame, and we do have to stress that a lot. It's not the NHL Hall of Fame. It's the Hockey Hall of Fame. International accolades play in there. But zero cups amongst the four. I saw that talked about a little bit today on online, on social media. Do you have an issue with that? I mean, I still think that at the end of the day, it is a team sport and championships are won by teams. I don't think it's a prerequisite to have a Stanley Cup on your resume to get in, but it is interesting to have a whole class without any Stanley Cup winners.
It is. It's unusual for sure. It's just one of those things. And again, both of them, you know, the Sedins, Luongo, obviously, in that run in Vancouver came very close. Alfredsson had a couple of moments there where he was also very close. I think it certainly helps your resume along, but I think it, again, whether you agree with it or not, whether or not it is a prerequisite for some, or maybe its importance is waning. Because you see more and more of it, right? And I mean, you don't really have to look farther than Jerome Iginla as a guy here, right? Now, I think Iginla's numbers pressed him well past that conversation and the own individual awards that he came up with. Because it is, I know we think of it as, you know, how many Stanley Cups does this guy have, but it's such a team thing too, right? Even as you look at the stats for the guys that are up for the Hall of Fame, there are guys on the list that have 6 or 7 Stanley Cups, but, you know, maybe 300-400 NHL points. Sometimes it's a product of where you are, right? And the era that you played in with a certain team that held you back from becoming a Stanley Cup champion. I think it certainly helps, but I don't know that it's... I don't think it holds the same weight as it used to, I think is the best way to put it.
That's fair. And again, it is Hockey Hall of Fame, right? It's not necessarily...
No, exactly. Yeah.
Winning a Stanley Cup has to be a prerequisite. But yeah, I just thought that was interesting as you kind of read through some of the people's opinions online. That was brought up quite a bit. Zero Stanley Cup winners in this year's class.
So, and it was interesting. I thought Eric mentioned it, you know, there. Hey, June 27th, and now we're finally able to talk about the NHL offseason, Will, and get a chance to catch our breath. Well, not for very long. As we know, it's a short week with Canada Day on Friday, and next week we'll be diving headfirst into it, not just here on this state, on this program, but on other ones across the station. The NHL draft is next Thursday, and still some massive decisions to be made for the Calgary Flames ahead of that draft. And I wonder more and more as we get closer here to the draft into free agency, and we know how much business can potentially get done over those couple of days at the draft, how much the Flames are looking at and putting an importance on, you know, kicking their off season off maybe next Thursday and Friday at the draft in Montreal. Where are you on it's a very short time in between the, you know, the way the calendar worked this year, between the Stanley Cup final ends and our first real major offseason point is just next Thursday.
Yeah, it's never necessarily a huge distance between the two. Like, we're not talking about a Stanley Cup getting handed out and you got a month off. But yeah, to have it this quickly is certainly unique. Of course, Friday is the first opening of the buyout window number one. July 2nd, club elected salary arbitration deadline. Next Thursday is the NHL's first round of the draft. And then rounds 2 through 7 go on Friday the 8th. And then a qualifying offer deadline is on the 11th. So a lot of things are definitely going to happen here in quick succession. And we just talked about with Eric, number one for all Flames fans, and I certainly think it is for the Calgary Flames as well, is what happens with number 13. It's obviously pretty automatic that you are going to qualify Matthew Tkachuk, whether or not he signs that qualifying offer or you can negotiate a different long-term extension. Well, that remains to be seen, but that I think is obviously a very slam dunk and just a matter of happening. I mean, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when we get maybe an announcement on that. Yeah, it'll be curious to see what happens. And again, the more we go on here, we're, you know, essentially less than 2 weeks away. Like, we're talking about 11 days before the NHL draft begins. And I think we've said for the whole time, Logan, and I don't know if you've changed your feel, but, you know, if I'm Brad Treliving in the Flames, I want to know Johnny's decision before I go to Montreal next Thursday. Obviously, they're probably going to go early week to have their pro scouting meetings and whatnot. But, you know, by this weekend, you probably want to have a pretty good idea as to where Johnny Gaudreau stands. And the closer and closer we get to that point, the more less likely it feels that he's going to sign. Or the less likely it feels like he's going to sign.
It has to be that way, right? We talked 2 weeks ago when we said, well, if we're 4 weeks out, if you're Johnny Gaudreau, what's waiting 4 weeks to see what free agency is? You know, take a mark off of that every single day and have the same conversation. What's 2 weeks? What's, you know, 14 days or whatever to wait to get to unrestricted free agency and at least see. And again, we have this conversation and we always try to, you know, placate it with free agent. Just because he gets to free agency doesn't mean he's signing somewhere else. That is simply the end date for the eighth year. And maybe Calgary's biggest advantage in re-signing him based on the money they can offer with that eighth year. It's been by no means a prerequisite or anything else that he's gone after that point. Your odds just change significantly in my mind. Once you've opened that door completely, I think it's very hard to go back, because I think you're looking for something, if you're Johnny Gaudreau, that you clearly haven't gotten. And maybe it's as simple as location. And maybe that's what Johnny says in a press conference 3 weeks from now with a different team, Will, that it's, look, it was simply location.
Well, I think at this point it's pretty safe to assume it's not money. Like,
I can't imagine it's money.
I can't imagine the Flames are lowballing him to a point where he's not talking. Like, at this point, and we've heard this from every insider, whether it's Pierre LeBrun, Elliot Friedman, Frank Saravelli, Darren Dreger, Chris Johnston, like, you name it, they've all had the same type of feel on this. And it's not about money. It's simply about whether or not Johnny Gaudreau wants to be here. And it's a matter of, with a baby due here at some point in the calendar year of 2022, and with your home base and a lot of your extended family being on the East Coast, where do you truly want to be? That is bottom line when it comes down to, because again, whether it's here or elsewhere, Logan, we're talking about a 7 or 8 year commitment. And I think that's part of what's taking so long, is it's a massive decision. And I think
career defining decision,
right? And I think taking your time here is because he truly does love Calgary. If he didn't love Calgary, he would have turned his back already and would have announced that he's not coming back. But I think it truly is a hard decision for him. And again, I think if you're the Flames, you want to know by this weekend where he's leaning. You might have a pretty good idea already, but you'd like a definitive answer before you jump on that plane and go to Montreal, because as we've talked about, and you know, it's going to open up some cash space if he doesn't come back. And as a result, you still want to make your team competitive and try your best. You're never going to replace Johnny Gaudreau, but you certainly want to be in a spot or at least have a plan to do so. And again, a lot of the run here for Treliving, a lot of damage has been done at the NHL draft. So I would think that the goal for the Flames is to have some sort of decision by this weekend.
I really look at the draft as, you know, setting the foundation for your offseason one way or the other, right? Whether or not you've accomplished a big deal at the draft and you get something done, you know, you're still setting those foundations perhaps for talks down the road, getting a feel for what other teams are trying to do, how that – because this is as big as an offseason away from the Johnny Gaudreau front as anything too, Will. The Matthew Tkachuk thing you've mentioned, that's huge. Two young guys that have RFA status that you need to make a decision with when it comes to the futures of Andrew Mangiapane and Oliver Shillington. You had some UFAs that played tremendously well in their first year as Calgary Flames. What happens there? You also have huge questions about guys that make a lot of money on this team in Sean Monahan and Milan Lucic, who, again, not by any fault of their own in my mind, but let's be honest, don't produce to the level that they get paid. And the less cap space you have and the less money you have to spend on big players, the more that those guys come into focus. And both of them have 1 year left on their deal. Can you survive another year with both of them on the books producing as potentially fourth liners? I don't know if that's feasible anymore. So what does a deal look like to potentially move a Sean Monahan or a Milan Lucic? Are you using a buyout in one of those cases? There is a considerable amount of work outside of 13. And I think a lot of it has to start getting done around the NHL draft. And you're right, maybe they do have a good sense of how this is going. But if I'm Brad Treliving and company, I'm with you. I would like some sort of definitive answer from the group of, and even again, even if it's just, hey, simply look, we're going to the 13th and we're going to see what's out there. We'll talk to you at the end of that day and see if we can come back to anything. Okay, perfect. Boom. You cannot wait until July 14th and then not have a partner at the dance for the rest of the year. You cannot do that. You finally got out of the first round. And yes, it didn't go great against Edmonton. But you can't lose all of that momentum simply waiting for Johnny Gaudreau. And that's tough to say because he's been so good here. He had his best year of his entire season here, and he might walk for nothing. But I just think that the worst case scenario for this team is to be sitting there on the 14th or the 15th or wherever of next month and not have plan B, you know, firmly in place or those details entrenched, you know, whether it started at the draft or wherever. Because I think at this point, if you're any GM, and we've talked about this too, Will, whether you're the Penguins or the Predators or whoever else that has a significant UFA at this point that hasn't been re-signed, you'd be foolish if you weren't looking at other options by now, or at least starting to consider them.
By the way, buyout of Lucic doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't think that would be a smart
thing
to
do. No, because of the money. I understand that, yes.
You're saving just over $600,000 this year, and then you're having a cap hit next year as well. So you're not saving really anything on a buyout there. Would make a little more sense on Monahan, but if you can somehow or potentially find a suitor in terms of a trade, then I think that would be the best way to go about it. And we don't even know really his status. I mean, maybe he spends all of next year on LTIR. I don't know what that recovery looks like for Monahan or what his status will be next season. But a buyout there, you'd save $4 million. It makes a little bit more sense. But again, you'd have a cap hit next year. So we'll be curious to see what happens. But definitely, you know, that is one to watch. And, you know, the Flames and Johnny Gaudreau remains, you know, if you're a Flames fan right now, Johnny Gaudreau remains priority one. But you're right. There's a lot of work outside of that as well. It'll be a fun offseason, if anything, because there's going to be no lack of news. And certainly I would think this Flames team is going to potentially look different come October of next season. We'll take a break, come back. He's Logan. I'm Will. Aaron's here as well. Logan takes the floor back for headlines. Been a busy day in this, on this Monday in terms of what's been going on maybe outside of the NHL. We'll catch you up on all you need to know with our sports headlines as we kick off hour three. Around the corner, big show rolls on your Monday afternoon leading into Blue Jays and Red Sox on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.